Brother Keith said,
this is unusual for me. Very seldom do I read from a manuscript, but because of the subject, it was it's something that there's not a lot of commentary to. There's not a lot of dissecting. Lucian's text messages this week about church history kind of sprung this back into my mind. I remember when this message was originally brought in 1972. I was 15. Anyway, I was young, but I was there. The person who brought it, his name's Gerald Huffman, and he was the original dean at IMBI in Washington, Illinois, where my dad was pastor for 14 years. And he was the dean, and then the other person who was instrumental in the preparation of this was Mark Maddox, who founded the church at Beverly Manor. He was the missionary pastor who founded that church there in Beverly Manor. And if anybody doesn't know, IMBI is now Illinois Missionary Baptist College, but it was Dad was the pastor at the church when that was founded. And so as a kid, my mother went back to school, and so I spent my day sitting in my dad's classes because that way I, one, learned to sit in a class and be quiet, and two, you'd be amazed at how much you pick up as a kid. I learned to read. When I went to kindergarten in first grade, I knew how to read because I had watched this all the time and heard these words, seen them written on the chalkboard, and I'd love to see somebody fun to study it, how much better readers kids who go to church are, because they sit and listen to Bible stories being read, and they're taught to open their Bible, and they learn to sing from the songbook and see the words. They may not be able to read them immediately, but over time, repetition is the teacher there. But anyway, so we'll test my reading ability this morning. Stumble over words sometimes, but I'll do the best I can. And this sermon was preached September 9th, 1972. It was preached at a messenger meeting in Illinois, and the messengers decided to create a booklet out of it, and that booklet's long since out of print, but it was printed. The title of it is Baptist Yesterday, Today, and Tomorrow. And his goal was to bring about a knowledge of the historical names of the Baptists and to bring about remembering the history, because there are some things that are important in our history as a Baptist church, and it wasn't always a Baptist church. That's the name we use today, and the way to trace the history is to trace the doctrine, not to trace the name. So he used Proverbs 22:28 as one of his texts. Remove not the ancient landmarks which thy fathers have set. And also Jude 3, Beloved, when I gave all diligence to write unto you of the common salvation, it was needful for me to write unto you and exhort you that ye should earnestly contend for the faith which was once delivered unto the saints. So Baptists have a glorious heritage through, and I'm going to read his words, so these aren't my words, but it's easy to adopt his words. Through my mind's eyes, I see a long line of preachers and laymen who, through the preceding ages, have held high the blood-stained banner of truth. I see them hated by the established religions. I see them persecuted, imprisoned, and killed by their enemies, all the way from Christ to Stephen to the millions who died during the Dark Ages. As Bill Kazabe well said, Baptists are either unique or they are nothing. In times past, the line of demarcation between Baptists and the denomination of this world was pronounced. The Methodists, Presbyterians, Catholics, and others knew where Baptists stood on issues. Today, the line of separation is a muted and mottled gray. And he wasn't talking about true Baptist churches there, but he was talking about a lot of the a lot of the churches that carry the name Baptist, the Baptist Church, the True Baptist Church and the Baptist Church at large, the people carrying that name, there's a lot of differences in what this church believes and a lot of the churches that have Baptists on their name today truly believe. And the line of say, where the world ends and the church begins is no longer clearly defined. Such a spirit and attitude is the spirit of Baalism in this Laodicean church age. This fact is tragic. The spirit of ecumenism has deeply pervaded the ranks of the Baptists of this day. And if y'all don't know what was going on in church history at that time, we had just had Key 73 and a few other ecumenical movements pushed by Jack Hiles and a few other folks who carried the Baptist name who probably weren't true Baptists. And they were encouraging Baptist churches to fellowship with the Methodists, etc., who didn't believe what we believed. And there was a big Key 73, the idea if you join Key 73, you might get a Presbyterian preacher in your pulpit. It was, they threw the names in a hat and drew names, and you went and preached. There was one Sunday a month that you got the preacher of the draw. And know that many churches didn't participate in that, but there were those that did. I think that no true Baptist is blind to the fact that something is dreadfully wrong in Baptist life. Spurgeon remarked in the late 1800s that we are going downhill at a breakneck speed. Spurgeon saw the breakdown in Baptist life in England years ago. This evil spread to the shores of America. Today, we are suffering the dire effects of this moral and spiritual breakdown. I read Baptists of old, Gill, Spurgeon, Graves, Fuller, Pendleton, Broad, Boyce, J.P. Moody, Francis Whalen, W.A. Gerald, J.B. Jetter, and others. And if you're interested in any of those folks' writings, most of them are available on BaptistHistoryHomepage.com. That's a great source of study material that's not widely available anymore. I rejoice in their doctrinal stand on matters that made Baptists differ from all other groups. Through the writing of these great men, adorn the shelves of many preachers' libraries, the doctrines they espoused, wrote about, and taught unashamedly about are not being sounded forth in the clarion tones in this day of widespread apostasy. Baptists are much like the city built around a spring. As the city grew and many houses were built, the spring became boarded up and forgotten. Doctrines that have been identified with Baptists for centuries have ceased to be preached in many pulpits across America. To wave a Baptist flag in this day of spiritual deadness can mean anything from Dan to Beersheba doctrinally. People going by the name Baptist are practicing everything from speaking in tongues to ordaining women to preach, and true Baptists are much to blame for this crass ignorance. History bears mute evidence that people do not learn from the mistakes of others, as one author well said. We learn from history that we do not learn. False doctrines is like leaven, beginning as a small thing. Leaven permeates the lot. False doctrines supplant the truth, not all at once, but gradually. And if allowed to persist in a church or churches, the doctrines one once held precious will be neglected or considered out of date. Here's the picture I desire you to see in this message. Why are Baptists where they are today? To understand where we are today, we must first examine where we were yesterday. After we discover where we were yesterday and see where we are today, we will be able to be in a good position to see where we are apt to be tomorrow. Think carefully with me on this subject, Baptists yesterday, today, and tomorrow. So it was a challenge, and this was a gathering of preachers, so he was challenging these pastors of several churches to really look at the doctrines they were preaching, and having personal knowledge of what the situation was there, a lot of these folks had strayed away from the doctrines of grace and those kind of things, and Gerald Huffman strongly believed those doctrines, and we'll see that here in a few minutes. So, where were Baptists yesterday? Their origin. John the Baptist prepared the material for Jesus to take and organize his church. Luke 1:17. These people were saved and scripturally baptized. Matthew 3:1-8. From this prepared material, Jesus organized his first church. Matthew 4:17-22. Later on the day of Pentecost, in Acts 2, the Holy Spirit empowered this church to go into all the world with the gospel message. So now we're going to go to the first century, 30 through 99. John the Baptist was beheaded by Herod. Christ was crucified. Stephen was stoned to death. All the apostles, excepting John, died the death of martyrs. John was banished to the Isle of Patmos, where he wrote Revelations. In this century, the first century, the disciples were called Christians. Acts 11:26. This was a name given them by their enemies, a practice which was to be practiced in the centuries which followed. At this point in history, the church at Jerusalem spread northward to Syria, westward to Asia Minor and Galatia, and finally to Europe. Persecution resulted in these Christians leaving Jerusalem. As they left, they took the gospel with them. Acts 8:1-4. The Apostle Paul was a great instrument in the hands of Almighty God in this century. In the first century, whole empires were moved by the ardent zeal of God's people. The Roman Empire at first tried to ignore the Lord's churches. In time, she sought to exterminate every Christian from the face of the earth. A bloodbath ensued under the reign of a number of Caesars, such as Diocletian, which claimed the lives of thousands of loyal saints. The church was under great persecution at this time, and I personally think that we aren't far from that again. I think we're starting to see signs of that. Second century, 100 through 199. In the second century, the true people of God took the gospel to a greater extent. Many in the century are nicknamed Montanists and Tertullianists, after two of their main leaders. The area concerned in this century included Palestine, Syria, Asia Minor, Europe, etc. North Africa was by this time had been at least partially evangelized. Then we go into the third century, and this is very quick because there's not a lot to back everything, but there's enough to tie the perpetuity of the church. We can't chain link this church went to this church. There's just not enough history, but we can see where the doctrine continued through. In the third century, 200 through 299, in this century, a very prominent man comes on the scene in Rome. His name is Novatian. Following a schism in the church at Rome, Cornelius is elected pastor. Disturbed by the growing slackness, Novatian leaves. With him go many dedicated Christians who also were disturbed. In the time, the followers of Novatian are dubbed Novatianists. Robinson, who says, on the death of Bishop Fabian Cornelius, a brother elder and the vehement partisan for taking in the multitude, was put in nomination. Novatian opposed him. But as Cornelius carried his election and he saw no prospect of reformation, but on the contrary, a tide of immorality pouring into the church, he withdrew and a great many with him. So we have our first Baptist split. Great numbers followed his example, and all over the empire, Puritan churches were constituted. They were distinguished by a variety of names, and a succession of them continued until the Reformation. And that comes out of a book called Baptist Church Perpetuity. That word I can't pronounce well. J.M. Cramp, who says the Novatian churches, what are now called Baptist churches, adhering to the apostolic and primitive practices. And we have allowed over the years other church groups to steal words from us. And Puritan, primitive, those kind of things. Those are good words to describe what this church believes. But we shy away from the word primitive because the primitives want to have an ordinance of foot washing. Which, you know, there's the Puritans. They have a you got to be you can't be baptized till you're 16. We have let them take those words from us, and they're really good words for the way we practice and believe. So now we'll go on into the 4th century, 300 through 399. In the 4th century, the name Donatus came to the forefront, especially was this true in North Africa. This name was given the true churches from their leader, Donatus of the Donatus Armitage, who says, "The Donatist agitation arose in Africa in 311 in what are now known as Barbary States, but it centered in Carthage, Numidia, and the Mauritanus." Kurtz says, like the Novonatists, they insisted on absolute purity in the church. They denounced the Catholics as schismatic. And then Schaff concurs, like the Monatists and Novonatists, they insist on rigorous church discipline. So, a lot of the message that I'm quoting here, and I am unashamedly quoting it almost word for word, I speak about it a little bit, he took from Baptist historians who are recognized as experts on the history of the church. So we'll move on into the 5th century, 400 to 499. In the 5th century, find the Church of the Lord being called Montanist, Donatist, and Novatus. These names were given in the preceding centuries, are carried through the time and beyond. Then in the 6th century, 500 to 499, in the 6th century, the same groups are prominent. This point in history, the Church of the Lord are thriving in North Africa, Europe, Asia, Syria, Palestine, and other regions. And you'll notice that as population spread, the church spread. Now, the 7th century, we're going to be a little bit more here, 600 to 699. And the 7th century introduces at least two new names, Paulicians, after Sylvanus, who emphasized the Apostle of Paul, and Paterans. The Paulicians were situated in Armenia and Italy. By 1000 AD, the Paulicians were in England. Of the Paulician orchard, it was about the year 653 that a new sect came into notice in the East under the name Paulicians. And that's from the Concise History of Baptists. Of their locale and names, Orchard said, in Italy they were called Paternia and Catharia. In France they were denominated Bulgarians from the Kingdom of Immigration. Also publicans instead of Paulicians, and Bonahamas, good men, but were chiefly known by their term Albigenses, from the town of Albi in the upper Languedoc. Of their beliefs, W.A. Gerald says, in these churches of the Paulicians, the sacraments of baptism and the Lord's Supper they held to be peculiar to the communion of the faithful, restricted to believers. The term Paternius is another name given to the true church of old. The name itself says Meseria, a name which came from glory they took in suffering patiently for the truth. In the 8th century, 700 to 799, the 8th century produced no new names. The Paternians, Paulicians, and other aforementioned groups persisted. In the 9th century, 800 to 899, the term Bogomils now appears in the 9th century. The true churches are still being called Paternians, Paulicians, and the term Catharia, the pure, is a name of derision given to these various groups who hold tenaciously to the doctrines of the faith. There's a book out there called The Bulgarians and the Bogomils. That's a great church history if you want something that's good to read. And if y'all don't know it, I'm a bit of a history buff, so the church history just falls into place for me. In the 10th century, 900 to 999, a new name, and one that will endure for centuries, appears in the 10th century, the Albigenses. This name denotes especially the Church of the Lord in southern France, near the town of Albi. W.A. Gerald says of them, coming from Asia, where they were known as Paulicians, they crossed the Balkan Peninsula and reached the Western Empires. In the 10th and the 11th century, under the name Paulicians, but especially Albigenses from the town of Albi in southern France and Catharia, from their pure lives, they filled and modeled both France and Italy, affecting in less degree other parts of Europe. That they were Baptists is evident. In church government, the Albigenses were Baptists. Their bards or pastors were every one of them heads of their churches, but they acted on nothing without the consent of the people and the clergy. Their ritual and ecclesiastical organization were exceedingly simple. In the 11th century, no new names specifically appears on the scenes. The Church of the Lord are being called Patarins, Paulicians, Bulgarians, Albigenses, and that comes from the Concise History of Christians. Now, the 12th century, 1199, two new names appear in the 12th century. The Petrobrusians and Arnautilus. The Petrobrusians took their name from Peter de Bruys. They were located in southern France. Historians agree that the Petrobrusians appeared in the south of France about 1104. At the death of Peter de Bruys, he was succeeded by one of his associates, Henry of Lauesian. Many true churches were known from their points as Henriacians. The Arnulus were located in Italy. The name Arnulus came from the leader Arnold of Brescia, who was martyred in 1155 by the Catholics. The Petrobrusians, Henricians, and Arnulus, who were thoroughly Baptists. Another prominent name is noted in this century, the Waldenses. If you've done much Baptist history, the Waldenses name is a prominent throughout several things coming forward. These ancient Baptists were located in the Alps of Italy and France. They were usually associated with the Piedmont Valley. Another name given to these brethren were Vaduis for their beliefs. That comes out of the Baptist Church perpetuity. And in the 13th century, 1200 to 1299, a new name is worthy of note in the 13th century, the Lollards. Walter Lollard was a Waldensian bard or pastor. Thus the Lollards were the same in belief as the Waldenses. And understand, a lot of these names were not something they called themselves. A lot of these names were given to them by their enemies to identify them as a group that believed certain things. 14th century, 1300 to 1399. One prominent disciple of the Lord who believed in the 4th century was named John Wycliffe. He resided in England. The various names already mentioned, Paternians, Paulicians, Waldenses, are still applied. 15th century, 1400 to 1499. In the 15th century, two prominent men in history, John Huss and Jerome of Prague, crossed the stage of history. Many of the Lord's churches are now called Hussites after John Huss. The general name Anabaptists, rebaptizers, now begins to appear, designating those who adhered to the truth. The Anabaptist name, which, from what I understand, that's what this whole thing... I don't know how many of y'all got the text from Lucian this week about church history, and that's why this brought this up. But they were discussing the name Anabaptist. Anabaptist simply means a rebaptizer, and that's something that isn't anything to be ashamed of. We rebaptize if folks are not baptized scripturally when they come to us. May be saved but not baptized in the right place. 16th century, 1500 to 1599, the Lord's churches in the 16th century were called Anabaptists and Waldenses. In certain locales, the names Mennonite and Picards are applied to true churches. Let it be noted that Mennonites of that era were Baptists, unlike present-day Mennonites. For facts concerning the Anabaptists, see W.A. Gerald's Church Perpetuity. 17th century, 1600 to 1699. Now, let's... And he doesn't bring out this, but I want to kind of touch on this. In 1600 to 1699, I can't remember. When did Luther... The Protestant Revolution happened. And I've had this debate with numerous Baptist pastors, not pastors who are pastoring churches like this, Southern Baptist preachers. They want to call themselves Protestants. And I go, man, you can't call yourself a Protestant and be a true Baptist, because the Baptist church was well before this date. So just Neil's 2 cents worth there. He didn't really touch on it there because the group he was talking to didn't have that problem.
Well, Protestants simply mean they are protesters coming out of the Catholic Church.
Correct.
They were protesting what was going on in the Catholic Church. True Baptist churches never were part of that.
That's right. That's right. That's right. And that's my exact argument with these who want to claim, well, then call us evangelicals. No, call me a Baptist. I'll take that name. Anyway, we'll go on. For the first time in history, the word Baptist appears as specifically denominating the Church of the Lord. At this point, the prefix Anna begins to be dropped from Anabaptist. From this point onward, the Lord's Church are known as Baptists. 18th century, 1700 to 1799. By this time, the term Baptist is known world over. In some locales, however, the older churches still persist. The Baptists are the same belief as Monetists, Novatists, Paulicians, Paterians, Waldensians, and Anabaptists of the preceding ages. 1800 to 1899. By the 19th century, Baptists have evangelized the world from England and Wales. In preceding centuries, they came to the New World. Some as entire churches. The Baptist Church in early America sounded forth the same gospel message which those in England preached, and soon all the way back to Christ. In the 20th century, true churches of the Lord are Baptists. However, not all Baptists are true Baptists. Many who wear this good name do not believe nor practice the truths which have always characterized the Church of the Lord. Pertinent facts. By belief and practice, these groups previously mentioned were Baptists. The various names given from Christians to Anabaptists were usually given by their enemies in derision. Other names came from prominent leaders among them. Some of these groups gave rise to other groups. At times, many of these groups existed in different parts of the world contemporaneously. In the same century, true churches may have been known as Albigenses, Waldenses, Paulicians, Paterians. Terms such as Catharia, pure, Aselphia, headless, and Anabaptist, rebaptizers, were general names applied to all these groups at certain times in history. Their enemies dubbed them pure because of their strict belief in separated life. They were called headless because they recognized no earthly head such as the Pope. They were given the name Anabaptist because they always rebaptized those who came to them from unscriptural churches, Catholic or Protestant. All of these groups agreed on 5 major points. They demanded regeneration before baptism. They baptized believers only. They believed in equality in church membership. They believed in separation of church and state. And they believed the Bible to be the only rule of faith and practice. So, we still hold those 5. And you'll see later on that and I don't know if we'll get all the way through this today. Statements from reliable historians. Able historians, not Baptists, have made statements which confirm the assertions of Baptists, that Baptist churches can trace their existence from the present back to Christ and the apostles. Hear the following. Moshiam, a Lutheran, before the rise of Luther and Calvin, there lay secreted in almost all the countries of Europe persons who adhered tenaciously to the principles of modern Dutch Baptists. Zwingli, a reformer, the Institute of Anabaptists is no novelty, but for 1,300 years past has caused great disturbance in the church and had such a strength that the attempt to contend against its age appeared for a time futile. Newton, a philosopher, the modern Baptists, formerly called Anabaptists, are the only people that never symbolized with the papacy. And if that is, they never worked with the Catholics, the Pope, papacy being the Pope. Ridpath, a Methodist, I should not readily admit that there were Baptist churches as far back as AD 100, although without doubt there were Baptists then, as all Christians were then Baptists. That's... Understand, a lot of these people who he's quoting are dissenting churches, and Ridpath was a Methodist. Page and DeRuth, Dutch Reformed, we have already seen that the Baptists, those who in former times were named Anabaptists and in later times Mennonites, were originally Waldenses. The men who in the history of the church in times so far back have obtained a well-deserved renown in consequence. The Baptist may be regarded as being from the old and the only religious denomination that have continued from the time of the apostles as a Christian society who have kept the evangelical faith pure through all the ages hitherto. Alexander Campbell, Church of Christ, and if y'all don't know it, Church of Christ absolutely despises Baptists in general. From the apostolic age to present time, the sentiment of Baptists and the practice of baptism have continued chain of advocates and public monuments of their existence in every century that can be produced. A Catholic, Cardinal Hozius, if truth of a religion were to be judged of by the readiness and cheerfulness which a man of any sect shows in suffering, then the opinions and persuasions of no sect can be truer or surer than those of the Anabaptists, since there have been none of these 1,200 years past that they have been more grievously punished. Hoseas also said the Anabaptists are the pernicious sect of which the Waldenses brethren seem to have been, nor is their heresy a modern thing, for it existed in the time of Austin. Now, he considered them heretics, but he says, I can see them through history. There's tons more. These quotations could be multiplied, but that is unnecessary. The enemy of the Baptists have made statements which verify the antiquity of Baptists. Persecution. God's true people, beginning with the crucifixion of Christ and followed by the slaying of James and Stephen, the martyring of the apostles, and through the 50 million plus who died in the horror of the Dark Ages, have ever been hated by governments, especially those dominated by state church. This persecution, which began in the first century, has continued through all the succeeding centuries. Although little persecution is known in present century, there continues to be some in countries such as Russia. In the 9th century, the Empress Theodoran put to death 100,000 Paulicians, 830 to 846 A.D. Of this, Orchard says, after confiscating the goods and property of 100,000 of these people, the owners to that number were put to death in the most barbarous manner and made to expire slowly under a variety of most exquisite tortures. In the 13th century, over 1 million Albigenses were slain in France. Historians say that over 50 million of God's true people died during the Dark Ages. You should avail yourself of the book Fox's Book of Martyrs, the churches in the Valley of the Piedmont, and others. The blood of the saints flowed freely in almost all the countries in Europe. And in the main, this was religious persecution created by the unholy union of church and state. And if you read Fox's Book of Martyrs, you'll find that the Catholic Church was forefront in this persecution of the Baptists, of anybody who disagreed with them, not just Baptists, anybody who disagreed with them. Now, he takes a diversion into some of the things of what we're to do. He talks about mission work. God sent John the Baptist to prepare the material for Jesus to take and establish his church. These were saved and scripturally baptized people. In the time, Jesus sent out the 12 into the 70. Later, because of the persecution, the church at Jerusalem scattered. Those who were scattered took the word and established churches. From this dispersion, the church in Antioch was established. Later, after being converted, Saul was sent out from the church at Antioch. Paul's missionary tours make up a greater part of the book of Acts. Through the efforts of this man, the gospel was taken to Asia Minor, Galatia, and Europe. Those who followed Paul in the succeeding centuries maintained his spirit of zeal and love for the truth. The Monetists, Donatists, Novatians, Waldenses, Paulicians, and others were mission-minded. Of the Donatists, Jones asserts, there was scarcely a city or town in Africa in which there was not a Donatist church. Of the Paulicians, Orchard says, without any funds or public societies, accountants to support the arduous undertaking, otherwise than their respective churches, the Paulicians fearlessly penetrated the most barbarous parts of Europe and went single-handedly and single-eyed to the conflict with every grade of character. Of the Waldenses, Gerald said, so widely had the sect been scattered that it said a traveler from Antwerp to Rome could sleep every night in the house of one of their brethren. From Rome, the gospel was taken to England and Wales. Of the Welsh Baptists, it has been said, in 1737, 30 members of the Baptist Church in Wales and their ministers came to Pennsylvania and organized the Welsh Tract Church. Thus, from Wales, the gospel came to America. Let this section be concluded with a statement by W.W. Edwards. I am much interested in your question about missions and the Anabaptists. They were the most determined, corporeous, and missionaries throughout Europe. Understand, some of these people he's quoting were old English, spoke the old Queen's English in these words, and I should have translated them. I just didn't think about it. The early churches of the Lord believed in training schools for preachers and laymen. Jesus was rightly called the master teacher. Paul taught for some 2 years in the school of Tyrannus of the Albigenses in France. In a short time, the Albigenses had congregational and schools and charitable institutions of their own. History of the Baptist by J.T. Christian. Of these early Baptist orchards, says, there was scarcely a man or woman among them who was not far better read in the Bible than the doctors of the church. And he was speaking Catholic Church. Of the Waldenses, it is recorded in 1229, they had spread themselves in great numbers throughout all of Italy. They had 10 schools in Valcamoncia alone. The English Baptists had their schools. The early American Baptists had their institutions of higher learning, Brown University, Georgetown, Wake Forest, Furman, Cross, Newton, and the University of Chicago are just a few that were at one time strict Baptist schools. Many of these at present time have sadly taken on the inroads of modernism. And many of these churches today are just no longer affiliated with any Christian thing. And the point is this, Baptists have always believed in Bible training. In 1230, Renarius, a monk, said this of ancient Waldenses, the heretics, Waldenses, have more schools than theologians and more auditors. They have translated the Old and New Testament into other tongues. I myself have seen and heard a clownish layman who could repeat the whole of the book of Job by heart, and many who were perfectly acquainted with the whole of the New Testament. True Baptists of today have their schools where the Bible is taught in its purity. This is as it should be. Baptists of yesterday were busy for God. The long line of martyrs and faithful saints testify to the fact that God has had His true people in all the preceding ages since Christ. For the fruits of baptism in the past, see the Baptist church in perpetuity. These were the Baptists of yesterday. Boy, I'm not going to get very far more. I'm going to try to get through this next section here. Where Baptists are today. True Baptists are humbled when they survey the long line of martyrs who died rather than compromise one particle of truth, the heritage of the Blessed One. Yet this age has produced generations who know nothing and care nothing for the suffering of the forefathers. This attitude has been produced by the neglect of teaching and preaching the truth. The breakdown in Baptist life began years ago. The truths held dynamically at first came to be held formally. Spurgeon declared of the situation in England in the late 1800s, we are going downhill at breakneck speed. The commencing in part one, the author has emphasized that these ancient people, the Monetists, Donatists, Novatians, Paulicians, Waldenses, Anabaptists, were Baptists in belief and practice. Yet within these groups, there were those who were not so orthodox. In later centuries, the majority of these groups had unbaptistic practices. Within the Mennonites, Waldenses, and others, some who practiced heretical doctrines. Orchard said of the Waldenses in the 17th century, but as this period, those circumstances and changes did take place among the people. He also said, as in the early, so among these modern Baptists, two classes are found. At a later period, distinguished by the terms of rigid and moderate, the former class observed with those most religious accuracies, venations, and precision, the ancient doctrine, disciples, and precepts of the pure Baptists. The latter are more conformed to Protestant churches. All this means that in many times the Waldenses, Mennonites, and others became heretical and unbaptistic. Applying this thought to the present-day situation, we find that Baptists, so-called, are strictly unbaptistic. Many call themselves Protestants and are leaders in the ecumenical movement. The Protestant Reformation of the 16th century had a dire effect on the Lord's true church. It is true that Luther, Calvin, and others did speak honestly to the Reformed Catholic Church. They embraced many Bible truths. Yet instead of aligning themselves with the Baptist Church, they embraced many Bible truths. Yet instead of aligning themselves with the Baptist of that day, they in turn began to persecute the Baptists as Catholics before them had done. Let no true Baptist think of one moment that the Baptists had their origin in the Reformation. This breakdown in orthodoxy actually began in Germany in the 1800s. This liberalism and modernism spread to England. From England, this evil spread to the shores of America. I'm going to get through at least the next few things here. Baptism. Where are Baptists of this on this important issue? Many are recognizing alien baptism, especially alien immersion. Others are practicing what is commonly known as Christian baptism, that anyone's baptism is good as long as it's immersion. Those who are even more modernistic have begun to have special confirmation services for babies. The spirit of ecumenism has made great inroads in the Baptist ranks. The fact is evidenced in the pervasiveness of the ordinance of baptism. And I hope this church always holds strictly to scriptural baptism there. Lord's Supper. Many present-day Baptists have abandoned closed communion in escape to the stigma of the doctrine. The appeal of ecumenism is to bring all beliefs together has deeply pervaded the thinking of many Baptists. And he used the word close or closed here. I strongly believe a closed communion, only members of that local church, because you can't participate in the Lord's Supper at a church that doesn't have discipline over you. And that's just something and there are people who believe close that I think are right on most things, but I think that's where we would draw lines. Church question. The majority of Baptists by name in this age have fallen prey to the universal invisible church theory. Augustine, in the earliest century, this side of Christ promoted the universal idea of the church. Luther, in the 16th century, espoused the invisible idea. Since then, the majority of denominations have accepted this erroneous idea. It is inevitable that Baptists would be affected. On the basis of liberal thinking, it is no wonder that some Baptists have had joint services with Catholics and others. If the universal invisible theory is correct, it does make no difference what one believes on many issues. How tragic that Baptists have allowed themselves to be caught in this carefully laid trap of Satan. Church and state, and this will be my last point here, and we'll call it a morning. The Baptists in history were univocal in their attestation that the church should be separate from the state in every aspect. Yet today, some Baptist schools receive state aid. Others are seeking such. Only a few in indifferent age care enough to raise their voices in protest against this grave error. History has proved conclusively that the union of the church and state has been a curse. America will certainly be no exception. Folks, once you take money from the church, from the state, whether it be in a school, we had this issue at Mercer University. Southern Baptist Convention for years has been a large sponsor of Mercer. Mercer was a traditionally Southern Baptist school, and the pastor I had over in Valdosta was the head of the state convention when we withdrew support from that school. And in doing that, it took us 5 years to get out of the deal because we had contracts that we had to fulfill. And what it was is we tried to remove the president of the university for saying some things that were derogatory to the hand that was feeding him. But because of some of the things that we had enacted, we had to continue and we didn't feel it was right to go back on our word. But and if any of y'all want, I can give you the web address where this whole sermon is. I got about halfway through. I think church history is very important for us to know. I don't think it's something we need to preach every Sunday on or to talk about every Sunday, but there are times where we need to review that church history, and I think you got a pretty concise, pretty quick. I'm sorry if you didn't understand everything I said. I had to keep my head down to read, and some of those words are tough on me. So we'll go on to church now.
I'm looking into that Montanian church you was talking about.